This episode is brought to you by Novillo Mattresses, where comfort meets innovation, giving you the perfect night's sleep you've been dreaming of. Are you tired of tossing and turning all night, struggling to find a comfortable position? Look no further than Novillo Mattresses, the ultimate sleep solution designed with your comfort in mind. Experience the luxury of a good night's sleep with Novillo's advanced mattress technology. Their mattresses are crafted using the finest materials, providing the perfect balance of support and softness. Whether you prefer a plush feel or a firmer surface, Novillo has a mattress that caters to your unique sleep preference. But what sets Novillo apart from the rest? It's their commitment to innovation and quality. Each mattress is thoughtfully engineered to provide optimal spinal alignment, reducing pressure points, and ensuring you wake up feeling refreshed and rejuvenated every morning. Say goodbye to restless nights and hello to blissful sleep with Novillo's cutting-edge cooling technology. Their mattresses are designed to regulate temperature, keeping you cool and comfortable throughout the night. No more waking up in a sweat, just pure, uninterrupted sleep. Worried about allergens and dust mites? Don't be. Novillo mattresses are hypoallergenic and resistant to common allergens, ensuring a healthier sleep environment for you and your loved ones. And here's the best part. Novillo is committed to affordability. They believe that everyone deserves a great night's sleep without breaking the bank. That's why their mattresses are competitively priced, giving you the best value for your money. But don't just take our word for it. Join the thousands of satisfied customers who have already made the switch to Novillo. Even when your mom comes to my place, just know she's getting a great night's sleep, among other things. Experience the difference for yourself and discover what it truly means to sleep like you've never slept before. Using promo code Sweezy or the link in our description, you can save 10% off any purchase you make through Novillo directly. Ready to transform your sleep experience? Visit their website today and choose the Novillo mattress that suits your needs. Your journey to a better night's sleep starts now with Novillo mattresses. And a reminder, when you use our links, you directly support this show.
When you want it the most, there's no easy way out. When you're ready to go and your heart's left in doubt, don't give up on your faith, but come to those who believe it. And that's the way it is. That's the way it is.
Hello, and what is going on, my fellow Schwoke Lords? What is up? Welcome back to yet another episode of Cancel Sweezy, known as the Lord's trademark favorite podcast. How's everyone doing today? I guess this week's episode is dedicated to a holiday that is for losers, okay? And people who enjoy Mary Jane. I'm going to see if we can get through this without using the real words and seeing if I can find words that won't trigger an algorithm. Yeah, so it's kind of a holiday for losers, but to be honest with you. People who actually, like, celebrate 420, you know, it's kind of a loser holiday. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of the sauce, you know. I'm a big fan of it, just as much as everyone. And I think this comes out, you know, in my tea break is over, but it's weird that people make this their entire personality, you know. Like, it's one of, like, Mary Jane and alcohol.
When you drink alcohol,
like, those are some things that, like, people make their entire personality, like being the partier. I know some people have decent brands around it and stuff like that, but, like, some people whose brand kind of has it also has other things going on too. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, doesn't that just make you look sad? You know, it's like, we're the band that loves alcohol, and we that's our personality. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, like, I feel like, you know, alcohol and Mary Jane, anything else, you know, that you enjoy doing, you know, it's like, if that's everything, is that's your favorite thing in life, you know, and you're also not, like, a doctor, you know. Like, I think I saw, like, maybe Wired or something similar to that, where they, like, ask questions, and they ask someone who was an expert in Mary Jane all their, like, thoughts and stuff. Like, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, you know, it's like a field, and, you know, and if, and I'm not claiming that everyone who loves Mary Jane is a loser, because I enjoy it. I know plenty of other people who enjoy it too, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying it. It is, you know, especially in states where it's legal and like you can actually go to a store and buy some versus like some guy you have to know. Because I know a lot of that, all the cool stuff that the DARE program failed us to comprehend. You know, everything the DARE program hates, you know, those things. I'm not trying to trigger any words. You know, there's something like when people do it all the time, they're just kind of a loser, you know. And I know people who like to get lit when, you know, like wake up in the morning, get lit and then go out. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I'm in the mindset like you should enjoy those things, you know. But there's also this concept of like, hey, there's like this idea you need to work hard then play hard and you need to keep it separate from your work or whatever too. That's what a lot of like good people like, I don't know why people are showing up to like work just so lit. Unless you have a shitty job, I understand when you have a shitty job, but like there's people who are just like high functioning with it. I'm just like, that's so insane. Like I'm just a big believer in you wake up, you do your work, then you have your fun. Like, you know, I think you need to have that mindset, you know, and you know, you can carve out time or whatever, but yeah, it can like, you know, and this specific substance is very much just makes you super lazy and unmotivated and stuff like that. So you need to make sure, you know, you always have to keep yourself in check there. That's why I took a tea break, you know, because I needed to keep myself in check. And also, if you don't know what a tea break is, it means you're taking time off from Mary Jane. And they say to do it for 21 days, which is what I'm doing. And so the idea is your body will reset and everything. And then you can go again and you don't have to use so much to feel good, you know? And it's also 21 days too. And it's like, that's not an unreasonable amount of time. That's 3 weeks, you know? And it's something to tell people, like, if you can't go 21 days without something, you're addicted to it, or it's a necessity in your life. Like brushing my teeth, I do that every day, and like I need to do that every day. Everyone needs to do that every day, you know. It's like, yeah, it's okay to, you know, you need to live your life in a way that allows you to brush your teeth. You know, that's how, you know, that's how that works. But dude, like, you know, you need to have like goals and ambitions in life too. And it's just like a lot of those people who are addicted to that are not, don't have any ambition or don't really do anything. And I'm like, you're kind of bumming me out. And some of us are trying to have fun over here, you know? So my encouragement is if you need to take a 21 day break, because that will help your body reset. And if you don't think you can do the 21 days, that means you are addicted to it. And you know, I'm a big believer. I don't like things having power over me. Even like when I drank a lot more, like I was able to quit. I'm like, I was okay if like someone told me like you have to go 3 weeks without it. And I'll be like, okay. My big issue, and especially with stuff like that, is I would use it to fall asleep. Now,
when you drink alcohol
to fall asleep, you don't get good sleep. Mary Jane is a little bit better, you know, about it. And, you know, and the thing is with the Mary Jane is you don't wake up with, you don't have any consequences when it leaves your body. It's just kind of, you're kind of like, all right, I'm awake. Time to go about my day. You don't have like a hangover or anything with it. So like, and that's why people justify, like, that's why I can do it all the time. Like, no, you shouldn't do it all the time. You should do it at the end of your day when you're done with your work for the day. You know, that's how you should be living your life. And
this is the type of guy you get.
So definitely, definitely, definitely do a 21 day fast. I actually do think like if you're one of those people who do enjoy their vices, I really do think it's important to like go maybe a month or do 21 days without it. Just once a year, go 21 days without it. And then that way you know that this does not have power over you, that whatever your vice is, like it does not have power over you. And you know, you have that, and it just shows you have control over it. And so, like I said, if you hear about a tea break and your first reaction is, I could never survive, sounds like you have a problem. And I really do think a 21 day break will really show you. And then it's also good to know, like, what does your body feel like when it's normal? And that's my advice to you. Don't be, you know, don't be Mark.
Come on, Mark. Don't be stingy.
and stuff like that. I also had this idea, this cool idea, and I want everyone to leave a comment, tell me what yours is. You know, I want you all to leave a comment on this. So I had this idea of, I watched YMH and I saw they talked about Jeopardy, and then I got this idea. Jeopardy categories. So, like, let's pretend that you get to be on Jeopardy, but also being on Jeopardy, you get to pick the five categories, you know, the categories that you want to answer and that you think that you'll get every question right on. And so what would be your categories if you got to make the questions for Jeopardy and pretending you're a participant and you would answer every question correctly? So I thought about my five categories. So here's the ones I picked. First category I would pick emo and pop punk music, because I grew up with that shit. And, you know, when you grow up with that shit and you like that shit a lot,
I like that.
You pretty much, like, know everything about it. You know, if you really like something, you kind of end up learning almost everything about it. You know, you don't know everything, but you know a lot. And so I think emo and pop punk music, I know so much. And we're going to get later into this episode, I'm going to tell you how much I know. So,
I feel like a woman, a real woman.
So definitely emo, pop punk music. I would just fucking nail that. I was like, this band inspired Tom DeLonge. This band was one of the early emo bands or emo and pop punk bands. And I was like, who is Fugazi or something like that? You know, I get that right. The next category would be the history of guitar, because I surprisingly know a history of electric guitar. I want to be more specific, because, like, I feel like my knowledge on that is pretty good. I don't know all the eras of guitars. We're like, this is a 1970 Fender versus the 1960s Fender. I'm like, I'm not always there on that, but I know John Mayer's Black One, his Strat he used to use. It was the idea behind it was that, you know, he wanted something that had less lacquer on it, but he didn't really want a guitar that looked like a barn, you know? And so he looked at Stevie Ray Vaughan's design, and they were making replica or artist series of Stevie Ray Vaughan's Stratocaster, which is, like, the coolest, and it's definitely been road-worn, like, a used road-worn guitar, you know? And that's what kind of John saw that and thought it was really cool. So then, you know, he got it in black. You know, he got that with the exact same, like, relicking as Stevie. So it's not a real relic, but it eventually got pretty relicked from just constant use. So he had that black one, and then went in black, and he probably got his neck and pickup preferences and everything like that. So history of the electric guitar, I could definitely nail. Next category I would pick is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I've literally seen every single Marvel project, and I know so much about it, and, like, I know all the little hidden details and all the little characters, and I read the comics too, and so I definitely would get the Marvel Cinematic Universe very well. I could definitely do that, you know? I could definitely just nail that shit. Music recording, and I would think it's more, like, music recording techniques, like, what is an equalizer? What is a compression? What's reverb? What is a condenser microphone? Stuff like that, like, some of the bare basics and, like, the more advanced knowledge on what those specific things are, I could definitely do that because I went to college for it, and therefore I've been doing it for a very long time. And the last category I'd pick, and this one is not too shocking, but is a little bit out there, the Shrek series, because I know a little too much about that series. I need to rewatch the fourth one, because the fourth one is the one I've seen the least. I always watch the first and second one. Those two are just fucking classics. Third one's eh. And then, but it's still Shrek. So, like, you know, and then the fourth one, that's when they started making them kids and stopped putting the dirty jokes in there that made me laugh. So, yeah, those would be my categories. What I would want to hear from everyone I know is what would be your five categories on Jeopardy that you would nail? Like, get every answer correctly. You know, in my mind, I think we all can figure out five topics we can all be experts in. And I think if we want to live life, we got to live life. You know, life's what you make it. So let's make it rock.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks.
So if you like music, go check out my music. It's under Shweezy, wherever you stream your music at. We are still getting I'm still working on the release schedule, and I should be having an update soon on that too. So definitely check that out. Keep up with the podcast. And you can also check me out on social media, where I will also be keeping updates on that as well, at the Shweezy, wherever you whatever your preferred social medium. I feel like we all have one or two these days. Like, we don't, like, there's, like, a couple, and I feel like we all have just a few. But definitely go check that out as well. Cash App, Patreon, PayPal, all great ways to say thank you for being a friend and to help that out. And, you know,
I was like, and I really like that.
So definitely go check that out. And then we make sure you do all the free shit. If you're listening to the show on an audio platform, go check out our YouTube page, like, subscribe, leave us a comment, especially about your five Jeopardy categories. I definitely want to hear that. And then if you're on the audio platform, leave a review, give us a 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1 star rating. So yeah,
let's go full throttle.
All right. Time to get into our segment we like to call
Cool Stuff, Slick Stuff, Neat Stuff,
where we see what the fuck Garth Brooks is up to. And by the way, this article did not surprise me, but it's interesting he said it. This is from American Songwriter. Meet Garth Brooks' number one fan, Garth Brooks. Oh my God, I love me. Garth Brooks is one of the best-selling artists in country music history. Even his hard-to-find limited release box sets and albums fly off the shelves. Additionally, his tours are massive events that regularly sell out in minutes after tickets become available. Some fans speculate that if his music was widely available on streaming platforms, he would also rule the streaming charts. In short, millions of country fans love Brooks' music, but he just so happens to be one of those fans. Brooks revealed how much he enjoys listening to his music during an appearance on The Kelly Clarkson Show last year. He appeared on the Emmy-winning talk show in November to celebrate Thanksgiving and to discuss his latest box set. While talking about his limited edition box set that was only available at Bass Pro Shops, Clarkson asked if Brooks listens to his old music. Oh yeah, he replied without skipping a beat. Oh my God, I love me. He added, getting a big laugh out of Clarkson. You're like, look at this jam I did back in 91, she joked. I can't believe I just said that, Brooks exclaimed. I'm getting way too comfortable around here, he added. However, Clarkson told him that there was nothing to be ashamed of. She enjoys listening to her music as well. It's actually very beautiful, she said. There are some things I look back on and I'm like, I did good on that one. Like, I get proud and I do listen to it. Clarkson added, I am a lot of my own listens. When we were kids in Oklahoma and Texas, it was our dream to get to accomplish this. Clarkson continued. So it's like you want to take advantage of that, really recognize the blessing. So I get that. Maybe guys are luckier than girls because girls always, oh no, this is Brooks. Maybe guys are luckier than girls because girls are always harder on themselves, of course. But guys keep it kind of controversial. Conversational, so you can listen to the old stuff, and the old stuff isn't singing as much as just tell me the story. Brooks added, "This is a weird thing to admit as a music. Like, I will enjoy my own music, and I think there is something there for every musician, especially anyone who writes music, to really be. If you don't like it, how are you going to expect other people to like it as well? And that's kind of, it's kind of a double-edged sword with that, because most people don't really like the sound of their own voice, and that's a very common factor. And so, especially when you're in a recording studio and you're the one behind the desk, it's really important for me when I'm working with someone who's recording vocals to say, I'm like, hey, just so you know, you're not going to like this, especially if someone's new, you're not going to like the sound of your own voice, okay? And that's why I'm here, to tell you if it's good or bad, because doing that, That's my job. That's why you hired me to do this. And I'm going to tell you if the vocal take is good or bad, because you're not going to, most people aren't good at recognizing when their voice sounds good or bad. Now, I'm my own producer and I record my own music and I have to record my own vocals. And so what I have to do, what I do a lot of times is I'll record vocals, bounce that track, throw it on my phone, listen to it everywhere, and then realize I hate the way I perform that vocal. I need to change things up. I know one factor that a lot of people saying, like, if you're not the best singer in the world, but you want to nail it in the studio, one of the best things you can do is go ahead and, like, just record your vocals, and guess what? It's probably not going to be good. Then what you do is, like, go to town on pitch correction and, like, pitch it up and make it work good. It's not going to sound perfect. Like, it's going to sound like you tuned it. Like, and the trick with usual pitch correction is, if it sounds fake, it's not good. That's the thing. Like, with good pitch correction, what it should sound like a natural performance, you know? And, you know, it's not going to sound like a natural performance. And then you listen to it back, and then you practice along with it, and then you're able to sing it just like that, you know? It's just a little life hack for you if you feel like you're not the best singer, but want to get better and, you know, be able to judge your own voice properly, that's something that you can do. But most musicians will say, I hate the sound of my voice. I hate my own music. That's what normal people say. And as we know, as we're 172 episodes into the show, Garth Brooks is anything but normal. And there really has to be something to like that level of fame where you just become an insane person. That's why you don't hear Taylor Swift talk a lot, because I guarantee she talks the same way as Garth Brooks. Like, hey, brother, how much does a gallon of milk cost? Like, $20. Here's $20, brother. Go give me a gallon of milk or some shit like that. You know, it's like you're so out of touch with reality. And it's not like necessarily, it's kind of their fault, but you have to think about it. Like, when you're that famous, like, if you can't walk out of your own home and not get bombarded by people, like, that has to do something to you. Like, when you play for millions of people every night, that has to do something to you, like, your brain. Like, that something has to get rewired in your brain that's wrong, and you lose touch with reality. And it's like, yeah, of course, you're the best-selling artist in the world. You're going to lose touch with reality. That was what's funny on YMH when Nick Simmons had his dad, Gene Simmons, on YMH with him. And they're like, you know Garth Brooks. How is he? What's he like in real life? And Nick just immediately blurts out, he's just as delusional as he is. I lost my mind. Because I'm like, yeah, I could see that. Because, like, Gene Simmons is also at that level of fame, too. Like, everyone knows who, like, most people know who Kiss is. And if not, you probably know something that he's been adjacent with, you know? And so it's just crazy. And, you know, and Garth is kind of obsessed with himself. Like, if you watch The Road I'm On, it should be on Netflix. If you watch, like, the Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy stuff, it should just immediately play after that. And it was all just, like, how great Garth Brooks is. Like, no one said shit about him. Like, even his ex-wife didn't say bad shit about him. And if she did, they did not put that in the documentary, that's for sure. But, and I assume they're civil because they had dinner, like, together every night as a family. So, you know, I guess they're somewhat civil. But yeah, the fact that you're just, like, openly admitting, like, I fucking love my music, man. My music's the fucking best. I'm better than everyone else. Like, okay, you are a bit delusional, G. And, the fact that he doesn't understand the joke, though, when people are making fun of him, like, he just doesn't get it and he thinks it's mean, like, really shows how out of touch with the reality. Because, like, when, like, I feel like with most people, they're like, yeah, he posts these weird videos and, like, you know, and then, like, all the comments are just like, where's my mom, Garth? Did you eat her or some shit like that? And he's just like, ah, oh, it's so mean. I'm never like that, you know, instead of being like, ah, it's a funny joke. You know, my videos are weird. I didn't have a good social media manager back then. Now, I am very surprised I've still not gotten blocked by Garth. I can't comment anymore. but I think that might be everyone. But I know specifically me cannot comment on his stuff. And there was a minute I thought he blocked me. And I'm like, damn it. I want to get blocked by Garth Brooks so fucking bad. That is a career goal for me. Actually, I'll stop talking about Garth Brooks the day he signs my framed Chris Gaines album, like the CD. Like, if he signs that, I will never talk about Garth again. That is my promise. And, there's another person I have another proposition to I'll stop talking about. I guess we could all guess who that sex offender is. But yeah, no, it's one thing to do enjoy your own music because really, like I said, it's important. Like, if you don't like your music, no one else is going to like it, you know? And like, so if you don't, it's kind of the thing, if you don't believe in yourself, you know, you have to believe in yourself because you can't expect other people to believe in you. You have to believe in yourself for the most part. And, you know, I think that really did help Garth become who he is today, a psycho murdering serial killer. But he is so out of touch with reality that it's so fun to talk about. And I will be talking about it for the rest of my life until he signs that Chris Gaines CD because
I really like that.
I really actually do like that album. And I actually want him to do, if he does Chris Gaines stuff, I will be the biggest fan, biggest supporter of the music. I'll still make fun of him, but and we'll still talk about him until he signs it. But overall, I think it's important to remember that. So,
come on, Mark, don't be stingy.
FNX Fitness, the ultimate destination for fitness enthusiasts looking to reach their peak performance and achieve their health goals. Are you tired of the same old fitness routines that leave you feeling uninspired and unmotivated? Look no further than FNX Fitness, where they bring a fresh and innovative approach to your fitness journey. At FNX Fitness, they believe that true fitness goes beyond just physical strength. It's about nourishing your body and mind and soul to unlock your full potential. That's why they offer a wide range of high-quality supplements and products designed to support your active lifestyle. Fuel your workouts and enhance your recovery with the scientifically formulated supplements. From pre-workout energizers to post-workout recovery blends, FNX Fitness has you covered every step of the way. Their products are carefully crafted using premium ingredients, ensuring you get the nutrients you need to perform at your best. But FNX Fitness is more than just supplements. It's a community of like-minded individuals who share your passion for fitness and well-being. Join their supportive community and gain access to expert advice, workout tips, and motivational content that will keep you inspired and on track towards your goals. They understand that fitness is a personal journey, which is why they offer a wide range of products to cater to your individual needs. Whether you're a seasoned athlete looking to take your performance to the next level or a beginner taking your first steps towards a healthier lifestyle, FNX Fitness has the tools and resources to support you every step of the way. But don't just take my word for it. Join the thousands of satisfied customers who have already experienced the FNX Fitness difference. Transform your fitness routine and unlock your full potential with FNX Fitness. And using our code in the description, you can save 15% off your order from their website. Ready to take your fitness to the next level? Visit their website on your nearest or your nearest retailer today and discover the power of FNX Fitness. Elevate your performance, fuel your passion, and become the best version of yourself with FNX Fitness. And a reminder, when you use our links, you directly support this show. Cash App, the easiest way to send, spend, and save money with just a few taps on your phone. Are you tired of dealing with the hassle of carrying cash or waiting in long lines at the bank? With Cash App, you can say goodbye to those inconveniences and hello to a seamless financial experience. Sending money to friends and family has never been easier. Whether you're splitting the bill at dinner, paying your share of rent, or simply sending a birthday gift, Cash App lets you transfer money instantly, directly from your bank account. No need to worry about writing checks or handling physical cash anymore. But Cash App doesn't stop there. It's complete financial ecosystem right at your fingertips. Use the app to easily pay for your morning coffee, groceries, or even your monthly subscriptions. With just a simple scan or tap, you can make purchases at millions of locations, both online and offline. And here's the best part. Cash App helps you save money too. With its innovative Boost feature, you can unlock exclusive discounts and cashback rewards at popular retailers, restaurants, and even your favorite services. It's like having your own personal saving assistant, always looking out for the best deals. Worried about security? Cash App has you covered. With top-notch encryption and advanced security features, your financial information is always protected. Plus, if you have ever had any questions or concerns, Cash App's dedicated customer support team is available 24/7 to assist you. So why wait? Join millions of satisfied users and experience the convenience, speed, and savings that Cash App brings to your financial life. Download the app today from your app store and start sending, spending, and saving money like never before. Luckily, the best part is, if you sign up using the link in the description, you get a free $5 just for signing up. That's literally just free money. So join Cash App today. The future of money is here. And when you use our links, you directly support this show. It's time for me to do a new type of segment that I've been wanting to try, and I had this idea, and I wanted to do it. So, it's time for music history lessons, where I go over the history of some sort of music, and maybe if this is good, we'll do bands, and we'll do other genres, but today, I wanted to discuss the history of emo music. Now, I'm an emo kid. I still consider myself an emo person. That is the vibe. That is the lifestyle that I like. You know, the good parts of that. You know, I try to. Yeah, and that's the music I mainly listen to. If I open up SiriusXM, I always go to emo. The emo project 713 channel 713. FYI. And, you know, what I usually listen to is a lot of 2000s, maybe some 90s, maybe some 2010s emo music. But today, you know, a lot of people don't know the origins in that stuff of emo music. So I think it's time that we just...
Let's just jump into it.
And see what the world what is the origins of emo music? So we start off, I believe it was the mid to late 1980s, and there was, the DC hardcore scene, which if you ever talk to some asshole, and they're usually assholes, they start telling you, like, real emo music is DC's post-hardcore scene in the late 80s and stuff like that. And, you think of bands, Rite of Spring, you think of bands like Embrace, Fugazi, I would consider in that mindset. And, yeah, and that's kind of the origins of what emo music is. And it's emo music, and most music genres down to its core, is just a term to describe the music itself. So when you say this is emo music, what you mean is there's not necessarily a certain sound, but usually sounds come out of it. What most music genres usually start out as is like just the title. So emo, and we think about what's emo short for? Emotional. And so emotional music. And so what the best definition I would say of what emo music is emotionally driven rock music. And so that's my detail. And, you know, you think about other genres, like if you think about pop music, what is pop music? Pop is short for popular. And so we use that term for music that is popular and music you would hear. And that's why some people say top 40, because that's technically what you consider pop music. And the thing with pop music is it doesn't always start. So, you know, pop punk, that started out from punk music, and then they wanted to be more accessible and get radio airplay and reach that top 40. And back in the day, it was TRL you wanted to get on, and that means that showed good success as a band, you know? And so that's what pop music is, and that's why genres become like pop emo or pop punk or pop rock. You know, it's more popular music, and so it's more accessible to everyone. And so when we think about emo music, I think you have to realize the origin is emo is short for emotional, and this is emotionally driven rock music. And it's usually in the lyrics itself, but it comes from post-hardcore origins and stuff like that. So, and maybe some punk too. So that's why I think I would include Fugazi, and probably why a lot of pop punk bands are going to be put under the label as emo. And necessarily, just because a band released an emo album does not mean they are an emo band. Panic at the Disco, their first album, I would consider 100% an emo album. And then after that, I would say maybe Pre-Odd, I would put in there, Vices and Virtues. And then, you know, kind of going forward from there, they became very pop. You know, Paramore is another example. Their first three albums, and I would say even the self-titled to an extent, are very emo albums. But then you go to After Laughter and that god-awful This Is Why. Those are, I would consider those more pop albums or 70s style rock type of mumbo jumbo. And then that was like 80s synth pop sounding. And so like they're more pop bands now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with going from being an emo band to a pop band. It's just kind of how the label is. And just because you're once an emo band doesn't mean you are always an emo band. That is kind of, because if you're not really, the idea is emotionally driven rock music. That's how I consider it. So if you really think about the emo label itself, it's been redefined over the years. And really with emo music, there is a wide variety of different even musical styles you can go into. Because like I said, it comes from post-hardcore. So you have that. And then you have a lot of pop punk bands that could be considered emo. Because I consider Fall Out Boy emo up until the one with the bear on it, Folia Do. I consider, you know, up to that, they were an emo band. After that, they did some pop rock anthems type stuff. And so when, you know, Fall Out Boy wanted to start out, you know, they just like, let's be pop punk band, because I think Pete Wentz was from that post-hardcore scene. And he was like, I want to make music that women actually want to listen to. And one of my best advice to give people, I should have put that on like a couple episodes ago and say my best music advice. I'm like, play music women listen to. It doesn't matter what genre, but play music women actually listen to. That's my advice. If you actually want to try and make money in music, that's something I do. So many different types of rock styles or different styles of emo music really kind of flourished out of that, because the title of what is considered emo music is emotionally driven rock music. And when you think about how rock music came to be, and by the time it reached the 90s, you know, they had that you know, post-hardcore, hardcore. They had some a lot of punk bands were still active. That's when, you know, grunge was really popular. And so that's a that's another style of rock music. And then Green Day released Dookie, and then Weezer released an album. And people think Weezer's emo. I wouldn't consider them emo. They paved the way for a lot of emo bands, but I would consider them an alternative band for the most part. So let's go into different types of emo type of thing. So you have the traditional first wave emo, which is like the purists would consider true emo, like the post-hardcore scene from DC, the DC post-hardcore scene, which everyone talks about, which if you're not into that shit, it's okay. And you're not, you can still be a true emo kid and you don't have to listen to that shit. You know, those that first wave, you know, Indian Summer, Moss Icon, Grey Matter, bands I would consider that, you know, Fugazi, Rites of Spring was, you know, they're kind of in the post-hardcore type of thing. And then you also have other different types of different, you know, another type is kind of indie math rock, or nowadays we're calling it Midwest emo because a lot of these guys are from the Midwest, and like is kind of a style that really, you know, when you're living in the Midwest, it's a style of music that you really like. But like when you're living somewhere like you really love, like, yeah, it's not, it doesn't hit as hard as you want it to. Those bands would include The Promise Ring, Mineral, American Football. American Football, I would consider the invent. I put them as like one of the forefronts of Midwest emo music because if you like Midwest emo, you've listened to American Football. I definitely consider that. If I say like what bands, you know, I want to get into Midwest emo, what should I get into? If you want to go from like kind of the beginning, the origins of it, American Football, 100%. Cap'n Jazz, Sunny Day Real Estate, Texas Is the Reason, Braid, Drive Like Jehu, all other bands. Current Days, I think Hot Mulligan is probably one of the best emo math rock that could be considered indie math rock. Jeff Rosenstock's pretty good. Pup is good. I would consider them in that genre as well. That's more indie math rock, but it's also what math rock and like Midwest, you know, Midwest emo is a better term, but what math rock really was, it was like emo jazz. That's how the best way I've heard it being described to me, emo jazz, because a lot of complicated guitar riffs and like, you know, you use a lot of seventh chords. And that's, you know, if you want to hear seventh chords or ninth chords or any, you know, type of like jazzy type chords and rock music, Midwest emo or math rock, as they call it too. I think those two terms can be interchangeable. I feel like math rock is a little more technical than Midwest emo needs to be. Midwest emo, I think Mom Jeans is up there too. They're a little whiny if you don't like them and stuff like that. So that's an example of indie math rock, Midwest emo, as we're now kind of how it's kind of evolved and becoming today. And then you have like the more faster, louder, and just like more aggressive music. And that's more, people called it screamo, which is not a real music genre. You call it screamo because the guy's screaming, and that does not define a genre, because that would be calling like, what kind of genre is it? Oh, it's like singing genre. Like that makes no sense. Screaming is another form of singing. So it's like a category of a way to sing in my mind. But, you know, everyone has a little different take. But that's why I think, I don't think screamo is a genre, I think, or a subgenre of the emo movement. But it is, people call it that when they are uneducated. And so stop saying screamo, okay? And so you get more aggressive type, you know, bands that really come from the hardcore, you know, metalcore type of scene. And these are, you know, some more big bands. Zeta, Orchid, Circle Take, The Square, Antioch Row, Page 99, City of Caterpillars, Majority Rule, Funeral Diner, you know those. This is the category I kind of put Underoath in, and Underoath is like one of my favorites. You know, I consider them in that. Silverstein, I'd probably put them in more like that. This is more emo stuff that's considered emo music, and a lot of what kind of makes it different from like standard metal screaming versus like in this style of music is there is a lot of singing too. It's not all screaming. There's a lot of singing along with it. Some guys just straight up scream. Like I say, Hot Mulligan, not example of this band. That singer's pretty much just kind of screaming, so scared that you don't want me here. You know, he's kind of just screaming it, you know, and it, you know, he sounds awful, but it's like great. It's kind of also kind of great too, because you kind of want, you know, and something with emo is it is has a lot of roots in punk. And so punk is very DIY. And so yada, 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 that's how we get there. And then there's sassier, you know, groups such as the Albatross and the Blood Brothers, See You Space Cowboy, The Plot to Blow You Up, the Eiffel Tower, you know, and later Orchid too would be considered there as where. Then there's Then there's the bands that I think are my favorite style in the kind of emo genre is the more pop driven. A lot of these bands can also be considered pop punk, but you can be pop punk and emo. You don't necessarily have to be one or the other. A lot of pop punk and emo music kind of, they're kind of peanut butter and jelly, where jelly and peanut butter are two different things, but they meld so well together that it makes a delicious, tasty treat. And so that's, you know, bands I usually like and stuff like that. So those are bands including Brand New, Thursday, Funeral for a Friend, Jimmy Eat World, The Reggie Jumpsuit Apparatus, Story of the Year, The Alkaline Trio, The Get Up Kids, All American Rejects, Glassjaw, etc., etc. That was kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s. I feel like, because I consider bands like Jimmy Eat World, maybe even The Story So Far, Brand New, and Thursday, those are the bands that walked so more bands could run in the future and stuff like that. And so when you think about stuff like that, like the pop, like the stuff that you would see on MTV back in the day, TRL, VH1, all those kind of Fuse always had the best shit. And I wish I had that channel when I was a kid, because my cousin had it and I was like just sat glued to the TV watching it. Then we get into kind of another category is I like to call MySpace kind of bands. And that overlaps a lot with the metalcore, post-hardcore scene. There's a lot of overlap when you get into there. Those are bands like Senseless Fail, Hawthorne Heights, From First to Last, Silver Scene, The Used, Chiodos, Under Oath, like I've kind of mentioned before. It's Under Oath, Alexis on Fire, AFI, you know. That is the stuff I think about there, where it's emo, but it's a little bit more on the hardcore side. You know, we talked about like what screamo music, it says in my notes, MySpace screamo groups, which, you know, like we said, screamo is not a genre. So these are bands that really got their start from MySpace, people discovering them on MySpace. Those are a lot of people you would consider. I would consider Never Shout Never in this category too, even though it was very acoustic ukulele poppy type of stuff. I would still, because there's a lot of emotionally driven music, you know, it's emotionally driven as well, so I would consider that as well. And then a subcategory from that is scene music, what they would call is scene music, which is still, I would say, is a branch off of the emo tree. Those are bands like Asking Alexandria, Pierce the Veil, Sleeping with Sirens, Bring Me the Horizon, Attack Attack, Get Scared, Black Veil Brides, Bless the Fall of Mice and Men. They really, you could also really consider them metalcore groups at the same time as being considered emo, because I consider metalcore really to be, because there's metal, true metal, like Meshuggah and stuff like that, and was it Sean and, not Sean, what's the band Jared Dines played with? Matt Heafy, the one Matt Heafy's in, that band. You know, I would consider them there. And these are definitely great emo music for people who like metal. A lot of people who are big metalheads these days, you talked about them, like what'd you listen to when you were younger? And then a lot of this stuff is like stepping stones into them enjoying metal. So if you like metal music, go back to what inspired a lot of people to enjoy it, the scene music. I would definitely consider the MySpace era of two something that you would definitely love, because like From First to Last, great. Silverstein, great. Under Oath, ooh, chef's kiss. Chiodos, if you haven't listened to Chiodos, they are fucking rad. Definitely bands I would suggest checking out. If you're kind of on the heavier side and wanting to dip your toe into the emo pool, these are great bands for you to start with and get into. And then last but not least, we have acoustic acts and we have pop punk. And so those are bands like My Chemical Romance, Fall Out Boy, Paramore, Taking Back Sunday, Armor for Sleep, Weezer. I don't consider Weezer on what? They're not my notes. Get Up Kids, They Made a Cross, Dashboard Confessional, Secondhand Serenade, All Time Low, and Mayday Parade. Some of those kind of even go into more of like neon pop punk, neon emo, where it's kind of like bright colors and very upbeat kind of thing, but they're still pretty emo. A lot of these bands I wouldn't consider emo anymore. Fall Out Boy, I mean, their new album felt very emo, but I wouldn't consider it an emo album. Paramore doesn't make emo music. Weezer's never been emo. They've always been alternative to me. And then, you know, this was the music that was the mainstream emo music back in the day. And so, like, that's the stuff. And a lot of these bands still make music that sounds like that, you know, and especially the acoustic acts, they miss Never Shout Never, but his music's kind of shit now, so I can see why they forgot about him. And he's kind of a dick, from what I've heard. He lives in Joplin, Missouri, so... In Dashboard Confessionals, you know, you get into, like, a lot of the more accessible, you know, like, Dashboard Confessional, like, these are, a lot of these bands are the kinds of bands that you can really, 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 like, have playing on your speaker, and your parents, you know, regardless of how Christian and uptight they are, they can, you can listen to it, and, you know, they're not going to have, like, an issue with you listening to that kind of music. Like, when you get to, like, stuff with screaming, like, your parents get a little concerned for a minute, because it's kind of like, it's like, you know, when you never heard that shit before, like, you're like, what is this? Is this, like, demons or some shit? You know, like, it makes sense. And then the subcategory from that, you know, even more scene music that would probably fall more into pop punk than anything else. Cody and Cambria, I wouldn't consider them. Forever the Sickest Kids, yeah. Metro Station, Cobra Starship, Q is What We Aim For. They're a lot of, like, they really fall under more pop emo categories because, like, it's very synthesizers, you know, very electronic, very much sounding. So that's where you get into bands kind of like that are still kind of a subgenre. When you start really looking at music genres and artists and that, you realize, like, really music genres are like a tree and they all have branches and that branch off from it. And music's always evolving. And so that's why we consider emo music to be around so long, because we've been changing the formula of what we consider what we consider emo music. And so that stuff like that. And even, like, you even have, like, some bands that, like, aren't emo, but, like, you could consider them emo for a little bit. Like, it, maybe it could be a little nu metal, a little more punk than emo, a little bit too pop punk than emo. Wouldn't necessarily fall into the category necessarily, but when you make, like, an emo playlist, like, their songs will fit in. Evanescence, Papa Roach, 3 Days Grace, maybe not 3 Days Grace, Flyleaf, Linkin Park, Avenged Sevenfold, Bullet For My Valentine, you could consider them emo, but, you know, they're not really emo, but, you know there's some influence there. Pop-punk acts like Sum 41, Blink-182, Green Day, Simple Plan. During the 2000s, a lot of people consider them emo. I would say Blink-182's one untitled album is definitely, like, their emo album, where you consider the other ones pop-punk, and I would consider Nine a little bit more poppy and stuff like that. Like, you consider that era of pop punk, like, you can, they can fall into a emo category as well, even though I necessarily wouldn't full-fledged call them emo bands. They can still fit in with all the emo bands and, like, work on their, you know, their categories, you know, and work on music they want to make, and still, you know, it fits into the playlist. But, yeah, I think we kind of come up to today in regards to emo music. You know, the genre kind of fizzled out in the 2010s because, you know, you can only make the same album so many times. And so, like, if you have a long career, like Blink-182, let's say Paramore, Fall Out Boy, you know, like, you can't just be making the same album all the time. A lot of bands do that. And I'm not going to call anyone out, but a lot of bands just make the same album over and over again. And so, yeah, that's why it kind of fizzled out and people really lost interest in the genre, and especially the bands they liked really changed their sound until really the late 2010s. You know, that's when nostalgia starts coming in, you know, and then Midwest emo really branched off from math rock and really started gaining prominence. And it was very underground for a while. Hip hop artists and rap artists, you know, Machine Gun Kelly, Lil Peep, Juice WRLD. Is Juice WRLD right? Or my notes say Juice, but I maybe Juice WRLD. You know, like, they kind of created their own subgenre of, like, emo rap, and you get to artists like Machine Gun Kelly or anything like Travis Barker is kind of producing today as a producer, because he's kind of making emo music and pop punk music, but it's also very pop music at the same time, and a lot of EDM elements, and especially hip hop beats added to it as well. And then you get more emo labels. And but as we currently stand in 2024, emo music really, it is seeming like emo music is really making a revival. I think, you know, all the people who loved it when they're too young to actually be able to go to the concerts, they're now old enough, we have money of our own, and we are able to spend that money to go to concerts and see our favorite bands from when we were tiny, tiny, small children. And really, you know, like, When you're 10 years old and you like Blink-182, your parents aren't going to take you to a Blink-182 concert. There's a good chance it could be like a Plus 21 show or a lot of bigger bands that they do have all ages show because they're playing in big places and stuff like that. But also, like, your parents don't really want to, you know, when they start saying shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, tits, fart, turd, and twat, like, that's when your parents take you out of the concert, you know? And yeah, but I think emo music is really making a revival. I think nostalgia is really playing a part in it. People, you know, they're at, when most music kind of, it goes through a cringe phase where, like, in the 2010s, you know, we all had, you know, we all looked back from, like, not that long ago, like less than 10 years ago, and like we all looked at our like hair that was swooping or long and stuff like that, and how we used to look. I'm like, oh, that was kind of cringy. And nowadays we know how to dress ourselves better, but we realize, like, we, you know, that music, I still kind of like that music, because when, like, they say, like, when you're 13, the music you really like is what you're going to stick around with forever. And for a couple generations now, from the late 80s to the 2010s, like, that was everyone's favorite music. Kids nowadays who actually enjoy emo music, they tell me, you know, they consider California by Blink-182, the album they did with Matt Skiba, that's also really good. Matt Skiba's rad, by the way. They consider that the best Blink album. I'm like, you know, that's a good opinion. I don't know. You know, we never really fully considered it Blink-182 with Matt Skiba, even though he is rad and is really cool, and I love Alkaline Trio as well. You know, it's stuff like that. So, you know, there's kind of a revival movement. When We Were Young is bringing back everything. Matt Kutchel, I believe is how you say his last name. He, you know, he makes all these videos, like Emo's Not Dead videos. And he did like an Emo's Not Dead cruise where he got a bunch of emo bands to play every night and stuff like that, which is like really cool. And it's really cool to see a genre that I love being revived in such a good way. Now, it's probably being revived with millennials, and millennials range from like late 20s to in their 40s now. But overall, yeah, emo is making a revival nowadays. It's really exciting, and I am all for that. And you know, any emo band that wants to give me free concerts,
you bet I'm coming up in May.
You know, I'll be at your show. So that is the history of emo music. What did you learn? What did I get wrong? Please leave a comment down below on what you thought of what I was talking about, and where to go from here. So Drizly, the ultimate convenience for all your alcohol needs, delivered right to your doorstep. Tired of making last-minute trips to the liquor store or dealing with crowded aisles and long checkout lines? With Drizly, your favorite drinks are just a few taps away, making your alcohol shopping experience easier and more enjoyable than ever before. Drizly brings the liquor store to you, offering an extensive selection of beer, wine, spirits, and more. Browse their vast catalog of top-quality brands, local favorites, and specialty beverages, all conveniently organized on their user-friendly app or website. With Drizly, there's no need to leave the comfort of your home. Simply choose your favorite drinks, place your order, and let their reliable delivery partners handle the rest. Whether you're hosting a party, relaxing after a long day, or simply stocking up for the weekend, Drizly ensures that your drinks are delivered promptly and securely. But Drizly isn't just about convenience. It's about choice. Discover new flavors, explore unique craft brews, or find the perfect bottle of wine to complement your meal. With Drizly's vast selection, you have the freedom to choose exactly what you want when you want it. Worried about the hassle of age verification? Drizly has you covered. Their delivery partners are trained to ensure responsible alcohol delivery, making sure that only those of legal drinking age receive their orders. Your safety and the safety of your community is their top priority. Join the millions of satisfied customers who have already embraced the convenience and simplicity of Drizly. Say goodbye to the hassle of traditional alcohol shopping and hello to the ease of having your favorite drinks delivered to your doorstep. That's not all. Using our link in the description gives you $5 off your first order, which can greatly enhance your night, if you know what I'm saying. Ready to elevate your drinking experience? Download the Drizly app or visit our website today and experience the future of alcohol shopping. Cheers to a new way of enjoying your favorite drinks with Drizly. And remember, when you use our links, you directly support this show. Honey, your ultimate online shopping companion that saves you time and money effortlessly. Are you tired of endlessly searching for coupon codes or missing out on the best deals when shopping online? Say goodbye to those frustrations and hello to Honey, the free browser extension that revolutionizes your online shopping experience. Honey is your personal shopping assistant that automatically finds and applies the best coupon codes at checkout, helping you save money with just a few clicks. No more wasted time scouring the internet for discounts. Honey does the work for you, ensuring you never miss out on a great deal again. But Honey doesn't stop at coupon codes. It goes the extra mile to ensure you get the best price possible. With Honey's innovative price history feature, you can track the price changes of your favorite products over time. This means you'll always know if you're getting the best deal or if it's better to wait for a price drop. And the best part, Honey works seamlessly with over 30,000 online retailers, including popular brands across fashion, tech, home goods, and more. Whether you're shopping for a new wardrobe, upgrading your electronics, or sprucing up your living space, Honey has your back, ensuring you get the best value for your money. Worried about privacy and security? Rest assured, Honey is committed to protecting your personal information. They never sell or share your data, and their browser extension is designed with top-notch security measures to keep your online shopping experience safe and secure. Join the millions of satisfied users like me who have already saved millions of dollars with Honey. Download the Honey browser extension today and unlock a world of savings every time you shop online. Don't miss out on an incredible deal and the chance to save money effortlessly. Experience the power of Honey and take your online shopping to a whole new level. Honey, the sweetest way to shop online. And remember, when you use our links, you directly support this show. It's time for Oh No, Our Table, the part of the podcast where I just give out my advice to you and see what we're doing with it. And we're going to see what we're doing with it, and guess what?
I identify as a fucking threat.
So you don't have to, you have to take what I say. It's always, I never lie. Actually, I've had an issue where sometimes I'll make up something and it turns out to be true. You ever do that? That's pretty fucking fun. You're just like, see, I told you. Because I just made it up. Like, just pretend that, like, someone's in, like, every movie. And then eventually you're going to, like, find a popular actor, just pretend they're in every movie. And then just, you know, it turns out to be true. But yeah, they are in that movie. Fun shit. So anyways.
Let's just jump into it.
How do I become a normal person? I'm a 23-year-old introverted guy with a history of traumas that make me socially anxious. Despite handling daily tasks and working at a care facility, I struggle with being social. Attempts to connect with my colleagues have been met with indifference. My ex mentioned a lack of charisma, but I've also dealt with gaslighting. Past issues with maintaining boundaries have made me overcompensate, leading to isolation. Living in a rural New Hampshire with limited social options, I'm concerned about loneliness and avoiding past pitfalls. Seeking your advice on how to navigate this. The first thing I do want to tell you is, guess what? No one should be normal. You know, there's people who have a level of normalcy that's going to exceed yours most of the time, but I think it's okay to accept that you're not normal. And it's okay. And actually it makes you, the people I like to surround myself with are people who I would not consider super normal. You know, your life is a little more interesting when, you know, your group isn't so boring and shit like that. And I don't know, boring people, you know, I don't hate them, but like, you know, like, I don't want to hang out with them. You know, I'm like, you want to smoke a joint or something like that? No. I'm like, okay. You know, and shit like that. So just realize, I think one thing I want to tell you is to realize that no one's normal. And really, really no one's normal. And if anyone really is normal, there's something off about them, or just a lack of trauma in their life. That's probably more answer to it. All the fun people have trauma. So that's something to do. From what I'm looking at, and just, you know, from the paragraph you met me, you know, you've dealt in your life with, you know, just some trauma in your life, and a lot of people are, and so it's one thing to get through that. What I'm kind of seeing here and reading this, like, the first thing that came to my mind was therapy. Like, dude, you might need some therapy, because if you're like, so history of trauma, socially anxious, like, you know, like, I have those problems too, you know, and I'm in therapy, and, you know, it sometimes you can't fix all of that yourself. Sometimes it's good to pay a professional to help you out with that who has no skin in the game, because when they don't have skin in the game, minus, like, you being their client and wanting the best for your life, because that's their job, is to help you out and live a better life. Like, and even then, if like you don't listen to them, you're still paying them. You know, your therapist probably doesn't like it, you know, that you don't listen to them, but you know, you're still paying for their session. You're paying for their time. And so like, there's only so much, you know, your therapist is doing, but like one thing that really helped me with therapy is, you know, like if I'm feeling socially anxious, I remember one time I went to a wedding, it was post-COVID, or like it was 2021, so kind of COVID still, but for the most part, it was like, I don't know, I haven't been on public in a while and I got too drunk and it was a problem and I feel bad about that. So I need to, I felt really bad about that. And it's just, yeah. And so like, then you learn how to cope better. And like what your therapist can do is being like, well, one thing my therapist likes to do is say, what is your preferred, like, what do you usually do when you get into situations like that? And then you explain what you usually do, because what you usually do is your reaction to it. And sometimes we kind of have control over, but when we react that way, sometimes it's in the heat of the moment and stuff like that. And so it's always good to, you know, see like, what do you do when that happens? And then you do this, and then maybe we figure out what something to do instead of doing that, you know? One thing I do is if someone upsets me, I need to leave the room, you know? That's, you know, I'll just be like, I'm done with you, let's try again tomorrow, you know? And then you just wipe, you know, if you need to work something out, you work something out. But, you know, it's just a lot of just good ways to get through life. And, you know, when you're having all these problems, mental problems, you know, it's good to work on those issues and figure out where to go from there. I'm not saying therapy is the solution for everyone, but I really think in your situation, therapy would really help you, and especially your charisma, which the kids call Riz nowadays. It sounds like you don't have a lot of good self-esteem and stuff like that. So that's definitely something you need to work on as well. And definitely, you know, in the history of talking to people and stuff like that, I think that's going to be your best. So if you want to be what I should consider normal and just, I would consider more a healthy mindset, I would say just probably go to therapy, dude, and figure, you know, I know it's expensive for a lot of people, but I know, I wish therapy would be easier for everyone to get and have access to. I think that's something in the health field that we really need to focus on instead of going to a doctor and getting drugs all the time, you know, which I take medication for it too, and it helps me a lot. But there's also like real life situations that you don't have control over and you feel like you're lost. So there's that stuff too. So remember that. Why do I attract only overweight women? I have no attention from thin women and at the same time, a lot of attention from overweight women, both online and in real life. My height is 5'9 and my weight is only 124 pounds. Jesus, dude. Twink. I don't understand why it happens to me. What usually overweight women can find attractive in one person, what thin women don't find. What is the difference in thinking thin girls and overweight girls in this plan? All right. Remember, we're speaking hypothetically and kind of generalization. So if you disagree that you don't do this, then I'm probably not talking about you. That's usually how it works. One thing I've noticed, one, if you're online dating, you're going to meet a lot of fatties. And guess what? When you meet people in real life, you know, they're always fatter versus when you see them on the internet. That's just my opinion, because honestly, why, if you can make yourself look thinner in photos, you're going to do it. You know, everyone, you know, you have to remember everyone's editing their photos nowadays. Like, it's so easy with your phone. And so, you know, it's another reason why I don't like online dating, is because like, you don't actually see what people really look like, you know, like their interests, intricacies, their flaws, the things that you need to fall in love with to find a partner. One thing about women who are overweight, so I don't want to be too mean to you guys, but they have to try, well, you know, compared to other women, they do have, like, you know, if you're talking about like a thinner, beautiful woman, it is like they do have to try a little bit harder to get their ham split. And so in that process, they are a little bit more forward about it. And so I'm not necessarily saying that only overweight women like you, but what probably the real answer is, you know, real women like you too. Other women like you too. Not real women. Other women like you too. It's just the fact that they don't have to be so forward about it being into you, as opposed to a woman who is overweight. That's probably what you're going to, because, you know, if you're good looking, you know, most of the time you don't really have to worry about finding dates and shit. You know, when you're not so good looking, you know, you do have to try a little bit harder to get out there. And, you know, like, it's, you know, don't shoot the messenger. That's just the way it is, as Celine Dion would say. And, yeah, I really think that. And there is a weird thing with, like, extremely fat women and extremely skinny dudes. I never got that matchup. It's like one person eats the food and one person doesn't. And, yeah. Is music business dead?
What?
Last week's trip to Nashville shed light on the stark reality of the music industry. There's no longer a tangible scene, but rather a relentless pursuit of live gigs for survival. With the demise of career-based scene due to the internet's influence, questions arise about the necessity of residing in Nashville amidst soaring costs. The internet's disruption, coupled with the fallout from COVID-19, has left musicians feeling like abandoned relics, competing not only with fellow artists, but also with social media influencers for attention. Despite these challenges, the dream persists, albeit requiring significant financial investments for online promotion in today's attention-scarce landscape. As a lifelong devotee to music, I grapple with these realities, hoping for a transformative shift in the industry's dynamics, yet acknowledging the uphill battle ahead. Yeah, and that's really, you know, I consider Nashville a home to me. And, you know, I lived there for so long, and I lived there for a while. And one thing really, after COVID hit, it became a completely different place, and like it stopped being Music City and it started being Bachelorette City. You know, like music really went away. Not getting me wrong, there's a lot of a lot of the big record execs and record labels and artists and everyone, they all still live in Nashville. It just seems like, yeah, feels like you have to do gigs for survival versus gigs for, you know, your love of music. And, you know, I think you should be paid, but like, sometimes it's not about the money and stuff like that. And especially in Nashville, it's like the idea is to, like, build your audience, because people should come across the country and even the world to come to Nashville. And that's how it used to be. People would come and see people play music and be like, holy shit, this town has the best of the best. And nowadays it just feels like everyone's just playing their generic country bullshit, you know? It's like, I'll be my own damn Dr. Phil or some bullshit like that, you know? And it's like musicians, like, take gigs, you know, with music they don't really like or not really passionate about, and they're just doing it for the money and stuff like that nowadays. You know, like, I'm hoping for a comeback in Nashville, but, you know, not being in Nashville right now, I'm like, I don't really have, like, a desire to get back there, because I feel like if I had that desire, I'd have already gone back there. It's just, like, rent is too expensive for someone making a musician's salary. Like, that's also insane. Like, the fact that your main, you know, your main kind of output into the world as a city is music, yet musicians don't get paid enough to be able to even afford to live in, like, a shitty apartment, too. Like, it's just an insane concept to me. You know, they're raising rent, and everyone's, you know, there was a while, like, 50 people would move to Nashville a day, and it's like, and they're bumping, and everything gets, the prices go up, and rent goes up, because it's more popular now, and it's just a lot of stuff, and it's just, Nashville is slowly, I'm hoping I'm wrong here. So I'm hoping I'm wrong after I say this, but I feel like Nashville is soon not going to be Music City anymore. It's just going to be a city that's perfect for bachelorettes to have their bachelor party in, you know, bachelorette parties, you know, and that's kind of an unfortunate situation. So I don't know if the music business is dead, but I think the music business in Nashville is kind of going downhill. And like I said, I want to be wrong about it, and I want to come back, and I want it to be better, but right now, like, I have no desire to get back to Nashville. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if, like, find cheap rent, and, like, what really helps you in your music is touring. And from what I've been here, everyone's been saying right now, the in their advice is that tour in Europe, because around Europe and stuff like that, that's where you see bands post in Europe all the time, because people in Europe really love live music, especially bands from America, because, you know, it's kind of a situation where they don't always have the opportunity to go see them because they live in different countries where, you know, like I might see Blink-182 a couple times this summer. And the thing about that is, like, they're doing, you know, they're travel the world, but they're also playing, like, every U.S. city. And so, like, it's so easy to get to it, you know, regardless of where you live now. And, like, if you miss the first tour, some people may have to drive a little ways to go see them on this tour. But overall, though, like, yeah, that's kind of the state of music right now. What's a skill or hobby you've always wanted to learn but haven't yet? And why? Okay. I've always wanted to be able to, like, draw, and you know, I've kind of like self-taught a lot of graphic design stuff, but I've been so interested in like wanting to know how to draw. I'm like, I can draw a little bit, I'm not good, it looks like bullshit like, but I draw stuff like that, and you can clearly tell it looks bad and stuff like that. And like, you know, I have my iPad, I have like the Apple Pencil, if you are watching you can see it here, and you know, I've like made good attempts, and sometimes I'll sit down and doodle and try to draw stuff, but overall, like, the thing I know with art is that, you know, to be good, you know, you have to be good at something, you have to do it all the time. And I don't know if I'm not sure if my window is passed on being able to draw. Like, I guess I could still learn and take classes and work on the craft, but you know, I would love to just be able to draw little, like, cool little sketches. Like, I see kids show me what they draw, and I'm like, God, I'm so, you know, I'm like, that's really cool. And in the inside, I'm like, God, I'm so fucking jealous of this kid. And then I know they're in guitar class too. I'm like, they suck on guitar though, so at least I have that going for. No, they're not bad. They're not bad. They're beginners, you know. That's why. So yeah, drawing has always been something I've been interested in and wanting to do. I think that's pretty much sums that up. What are some legitimate reasons an employee would not support unionizing? You know, the reasoning, the best one I've heard, and these are from anti-union busters. One, you have to pay dues, which, I mean, is fair, but I think sometimes with your dues, you get your health insurance through that from your union too, right? I've never been in a union because every job that I've worked that doesn't have a union, like customer service call centers. If they do have a union, I'd be very surprised because most of those big companies with the customer service call centers would block that shit, who would fight to the death to make sure a union doesn't happen. So a lot of it's like union dues, and a lot of like employers are just like saying that, like, if you can't trust us to handle it, you know, like, do you think the union's going to do any better? I'm like, yeah. I mean, like, the answer to that is yeah. So I think it's more like your bosses are good people and you don't want to do that to them. I'm like, just because they're good people doesn't mean you don't have to think about starting a union. I know a lot, and I also know a lot of dum-dums think they can start a union, wouldn't be like the head of the union for their specific branch or whatever bullshit. I'm like, they're pretty fucking dumb, and I would not follow them into battle. You know, those are some good reasons, but like, for overall, like, you think about it, like, a union, like, the thing is, and they're trying to do that, the reason why they're trying to block unions is because unions are like a powerful representative for the employee. And so, like, if you're gonna get written up or something like that, they like corner you in a room and have like three people in there who, like, no matter what they say, they're always gonna take the person's side, even if they're wrong, like 100% wrong. They kind of gang up on you, and like, they have these like secret meetings, they can't be recorded. One time I actually was in a meeting, I'm like, I'm gonna record this meeting, and then they were like, you can't do that on the floor. I'm like, well, you know, then I gave up. But nowadays, if like they're going to have a big meeting with that, like if they're going to have a meeting and they're going to have multiple other managers in there with me, I'm recording that meeting, you know, like, and I might even film it too, because I need to make sure, since I don't have a representative like a union rep, I need to have that information down and have, you know, either get it, you know, they say to get it in writing, but, you know, I think a video will also suffice too, you know, and or record. I heard audio recordings aren't as good because, you could easily not tell who's the one talking and stuff like that. So yeah, how did you spend your teen years? Okay, well, I loved pop punk emo music, so I did that. But I think the big thing I did in my teen years was I was a little too involved with church, and I was young. I feel like I was young. It's so crazy to think there are people who willingly in life chose to be born again Christians, versus a lot of people like me who were born into it and stuff like that. And I feel like when you're born into it, you don't always know better. you know, because that this is just life and you don't have a perspective of the world yet. And then as you get older, you get a perspective on the world and realize how what things actually are. And so spent a lot of time doing that. I was mentally ill, and the church's solution was to trust in God more instead of get on medication and go to a therapist, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it was bad. So I spent too much time doing that. And, you know, because I made so many good those years, like I made lifelong friends, you know, in that. So I can't say like I regret it, but I kind of wish I could say keep doing the Christian thing, but get on some medication. And remember, anyone who has a conservative mindset with their Christianity is full of shit. You know, that's kind of like the advice if I could go back to tell my 16-year-old self, is just like a lot of what these people say are bullshit, but stick around and for a while, you know, like I don't want to say don't be involved in it, because just I've made so many great friends over the years with it. But yeah, it's different. I'm always talking about Christianity on this show. It's because it traumatized me, and I got to get this trauma out of my body. Last question we got here. Why does it feel so awkward to take money for the job? I've been a little artsy these days, years, whatever. Family and friends started giving me jobs for comics, postcards, etc. Now this is like a hobby for me. I really don't see it as a job, as it doesn't take much effort to get a decent product, but they always ask me, how much do you want for that? Which leaves me very perplexed. I tend to give them a very low price out of politeness, but earning a little bit of money would be quite helpful in my situation. How did you get out of your comfort zone and give them some reasonable prizes? So yeah, when you... stuff like this is similar to music and shit like that. You know, and I'll actually put music recording first off. When you're new at it and stuff like that, you kind of need to do it for free to get your name out there and stuff like that. But at some point, you need to start charging people. And now, when it's like friends and family, I would kind of consider that, or very close friends and stuff like that, there is a little bit to them. Like, I don't really want to, like... they're my family, and I, you know, I actually kind of want to do this because I care about them, and, you know, this is what they mean to me, and I kind of want to do that out of support. And then you get people you don't know and stuff like that. So, yeah, very low prices are a good way. If, like, you really don't want to charge someone that much, yeah, feel free to go lowball them, you know, or give them a low offer and stuff like that. Because, like, you, if you're in the mindset of, like, you're almost going to do it for free and they are going to pay you, just charge them a little bit, you know? Like, someone wants me to play, you know, music for them, but they say, I don't know, they can't pay me, but there's, like, a really close friend and maybe a charity event, like, but, like, we can pay you, it won't be that much. You know, like, you know, that's fine, you know? Like, I think there's a lot of good things going on here. I think what you need to understand is, like, this kindness you do have, that people can't, and like your willingness to really do this stuff for people for free, is that a lot of times people can take advantage of that. And I think that's really where an issue can arise for you. So I think it's just understanding your worth, your value, and the value of the stuff you make, and realizing that like some of this stuff, like for me, music, like I have to maintain my guitars. I have to, you know, keep updated with strings when they go bad. I have to keep it clean, polish the frets, and make sure it's set up nicely and stuff like that. And so I'm always having to do that, and like it costs me money to do that as well. So even then, you can think of like, hey, this money I made is an investment into my own craft. And then, you know, like my barber updated his prices to like $5 this year. I'm like, I didn't complain. I'm like, I understand the hustle. So really, I think it's nice that you're doing these things for your friends and even not charging them that much. You just have to really keep the mindset of, am I being taken advantage of for this? I mean, that's what churches used to do with music for me. Only time I ever get invited to church these days is to play in their worship band for free. That's the only time I ever get asked. And, you know, it's important. You know, you can be nice, you can be respectful, but yeah, you know, you can understand, you know, at the worst, if you give someone a prize and they say, I think that's too much for me, and then just go with them, like, look, I have bills and I have other stuff that I need the money for. And so, like, it's not just, you know, it is paying me to do something, but you have to realize that when you pay someone to do something, that money goes back into their lives and helps them live a life. And so that's something you really need to realize, especially when you get, if you want to move to a point where you can make a living doing stuff like that, you really have to have that sort of mindset. But anyways, though, that wraps it up for today's episode of Cancel Shweezy. You know, like I always say, thank you guys so much for listening to the show. And if you're a loser who likes the Mary Jane, make sure you figure your shit out. I want to end this properly. Honk if you love butt drugs and stay awesome.
Believe it or not, Schwag isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I'd pick up the phone. Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home. Thank you for tuning in to Cancel Shweezy, the Lord's trademark favorite podcast, and joining me on this incredible journey. I hope you've enjoyed the valuable insights and engaging discussion I brought to your ears. To ensure you never miss an episode, hit that subscribe button now. By subscribing, you'll receive automatic updates whenever we release new content, keeping you in the loop with the latest episodes and topics. Subscribing not only guarantees that you'll never miss a beat, but also helps support our show. Your subscription plays a crucial role in helping us continue to bring you high-quality content and maintain our podcast growth. So whether you're listening on your favorite podcast platform or watching our YouTube channel, take a moment to click that subscribe button. Join our community of passionate listeners and be part of the journey. Personally, I appreciate your support, and together, we can make this podcast even better, so don't wait any longer. Hit that subscribe button now and stay connected with us. Thank you for being part of our podcast family.